The prophet Elisha, chapter 91. Quietly, the prophet Elisha returns to Jordan. Just a short time before, his beloved master was taken into heaven in a chariot of fire. Elisha cannot do without Elijah. He needs him so much. Sadness fills his heart. But if he thinks about Elijah and not about himself, he cannot be sad. Isn't his master delivered from all sadness and sorrow? After Elijah had disappeared from sight, Elisha picks up the mantle of Elijah and returns. He must do without the support of Elijah in the future. Henceforth, he must perform this heavy labor alone. Alone? No, he cannot do that. His work is too difficult. Even if Elijah is not with him, the God of Elijah is still with him. He will never be taken away. He remains. A peaceful calm fills the soul of Elisha. In deep thoughts, he approaches Jordan and stands, and before he knows it, he stands before the water. What now? A short time ago, he and Elijah went across the river in a path that God made specially for them. But that path is not there now. How can he get to the other side? Elisha takes the mantle of his great master and strikes the water exactly as Elijah had done. The young men from the school for the prophets at Jericho are standing on the other side of the river waiting for his return. You mustn't think Elisha strikes the water with this mantle to let the young prophet see that he could perform this wonderful deed. Oh no, listen to what he says. Where is the Lord God of Elijah? It is as though he would say, O Lord, thou hast separated the water in this river a short time ago for my master, so we could go over without getting wet. Lord, thou art still the same. Help me also so I can return. For this reason he strikes the water with the mantle. God, in answer to his prayer, again makes a path across the river Jordan. He returns in this path. The prophets of the school see this and say to each other, See, the spirit of Elijah doth rest upon Elisha. They walk forward and bow to the ground before him. Children, the Lord provides that Elisha receives the same respect as his master. That was necessary because Elisha must now give guidance to the school for the prophets. When Elisha comes to them, they ask him, Master, give us permission to go hunt for the body of Elijah, and then we can bury him decently. But Elisha shakes his head and answers, It is not necessary to look for him. Elijah is no more. God has taken him to himself in glory with both body and soul. Yes, but suppose it is not true, they say doubtfully. Then his body will remain unburied. The wild animals and the birds of prey will devour it, and we loved him too much for that. May we go? They continue asking until Elisha finally consents. Send men to seek. Try to find him. For 3 days they vainly search the entire vicinity. They find nothing. Naturally they find nothing, because Elijah's body is no longer upon the earth. It is in heaven. Having accomplished nothing, they finally return. Elisha says, Did I not say unto you, Go not? He remains in Jericho for a few days, and the inhabitants of Jericho take this opportunity to ask Elisha something. "Master," they say, "we like to live in Jericho, but one thing is pitiful. The water here is bad." It is really a complaint. Secretly, they hope that Elisha can help them, otherwise they wouldn't have said it. Elisha says, "Bring me a new cruse with salt in it." They do this immediately. The prophet walks to the spring of water and pours the salt into it. "Elisha, what are you doing now? The people cannot drink it at all. Now it has become salty beside." "No, boys and girls, that does not happen. By this remedy, this strange remedy, the water is purified. From that moment, there is nothing wrong with it. The Lord made this water good through the instrumentality of his servant Elisha. People cannot do this. Only God Almighty can do it." "Oh, listen. Hear the shouting and screaming. What is going on?" "Take particular notice. A man is walking down the street, followed by a group of children who are calling him names." "This is impudent." "Yes, ill-mannered." "Boys, do you sometimes follow and shout after old people on the street? If you do, you should be ashamed of yourselves. No decent boys will do so." "That is just what is happening here. They are shouting after this man. Go up, thou bald head. Go up, thou bald head." "Who is this man?" "He is the prophet Elisha, who is on his way from Jericho to Bethel." "How dare they call him names? It is never permitted, but especially not to a prophet of the Lord. Why are they shouting these words, and what really is the meaning? Listen, and I will tell you. The golden calf, which was made by Jeroboam, stood in Bethel. The inhabitants of Bethel thought that was fine, because all the Israelites would come to their city to worship this calf. Naturally, they would then eat and sleep there too. These inhabitants would earn plenty of money by this. Besides, they thought it a great honor for their city. They hoped it would remain that way. This was an insult to the Lord, but they weren't concerned about that. Elijah had warned the people continually about those golden calves, and for that reason they had hated Elijah. They had heard Elijah had ascended into heaven, and Elisha is the new prophet. So they also hate Elisha. They speak about him mockingly and with contempt. They do this in the presence of their children. Thus, they too hear it and have no respect for the prophets. When these small boys see Elisha walking, they immediately gather together and do exactly as their parents. They begin to ridicule Elisha, the prophet of the Lord. "Go up, thou bald head," they shout scornfully and derisively. Their meaning with this is, "We want to be rid of you. Disappear, the same as Elijah, your master. Bald head, go up." They call this servant of the Lord bald head. Such an insult. How impudent. Yes, sinful. Elisha hears this. He also hears that they mock with the ascension of Elijah. He cannot bear this. He may not permit it either. He turns about and curses them in the name of the Lord. This means he tells them that the Lord will punish this horrible mockery. Suddenly, the branches of the bushes on the sides of the path crack violently. Near this neighborhood, there is a forest. two big bears come racing toward these mocking and laughing children. The boys scream from fright and try to escape, but it is already too late. 42 children are torn to pieces and killed by these bears. This surely is very dreadful, and a punishment of the Lord for their wicked mockery. That night, sorrow and mourning prevail in the homes of these slain children. Yes, fathers and mothers, you are now weeping, but you have been the cause of it. You have taught your children this disrespect, and now you too are punished by losing your children. Such a terrible story, isn't it? It is written in the Bible for a warning to us, boys and girls. Never mock with God's people, especially not with His servants, for the Lord will punish all mockers. You can be sure of that. A large army is slowly marching forward through the wilderness, which lies south of the land of Canaan. It is a hot, sandy plain. This army is not only one army, but actually three armies under the leadership of three kings. These armies are traveling to the land of Moab. You will remember that each year the king of Moab must give the kings of Israel 100,000 lambs and 100,000 rams. After Ahab had been slain, the king of Moab did not want to give this anymore, isn't that right? Ahaziah, who succeeded his father, would have gone out to battle to force the disobedient Moabites into subjection. But when he fell through the lattice, he could not go. He lay helpless upon his bed. He died as the consequence of this fall. We told you this in the previous chapter. His brother Joram, also spelled Jehoram in the Bible, now reigns over Israel. He mustered his army and is on his way to Moab to punish this rebellious nation. Thus Joram is one of those three kings. However, Joram is not alone. He asked Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, to help him. Wasn't Jehoshaphat a friend of Ahab, and didn't Jehoshaphat also help his father Ahab? And that had a sad ending, because Ahab was slain, and Jehoshaphat had a narrow escape from death. When Joram asked Jehoshaphat to go out to battle with him, Jehoshaphat did not refuse. This was a pity, because Jehoshaphat was a God-fearing king, and Joram was not. These two did not belong together. Jehoshaphat is the second king of that great army which is traveling through the wilderness toward Moab. The third monarch is the king of Edom. The Edomites already were subjected by David, and they still are servants to the kings of Judah. The king of Edom must go with them upon the command of Jehoshaphat. The three will force the Moabites into obedience. They march around the Dead Sea. That is a long roundabout way. Beside, they must pass through the dry, hot wilderness. This powerful army already has been on its way for 7 days. Still, the journey is not ended. The drinking water which they had taken with them will soon be gone. They search around to see if they can find a hidden well or spring, but all their seeking is useless. That is serious. In a short time, all these thousands of soldiers shall perish miserably. They shall die from thirst. It is so hot there. What must we do? Anxiously asks Joram of Jehoshaphat. The Lord wants to deliver us all into the hands of the Moabites. Do you hear that? Joram puts the blame on the Lord. However, Jehoshaphat immediately asks, "Is there not here a prophet of the Lord?" Whenever they come into any difficulty, Jehoshaphat always asks the Lord for advice. Joram does not. This is because the God-fearing Jehoshaphat cannot do without the Lord. One of the servants of Joram hears this and answers, "Yes, the prophet Elisha is with us." "He is a prophet of the Lord," Jehoshaphat says joyfully. "He will not deceive us. He will make known to us the word of the Lord." Immediately, these three kings look for the prophet. However, Elisha is far from being friendly toward Joram. He says, "Go to the prophets of your father and your mother. Let them now help you out of your distress." But when Joram continues to ask, Elisha agrees to ask the Lord for advice. But Elisha says, "I will do it only because King Jehoshaphat is here. Otherwise, I would not listen to you." The Lord hears Elisha and gives deliverance in a wonderful way. They must dig ditches in the dry, loose desert sand. Immediately, the soldiers are put to work, and they work with all their might, for their lives depend upon it. When the soldiers awake early the next morning, water comes streaming out of the wilderness, and these ditches are soon filled to the brim. Oh, where does all this water come from so unexpectedly? It did not blow and rain violently. Children, the Lord performs a great wonder in order to deliver these thousands of soldiers from death. Besides, the God of Israel shows Joram that he is mightier than all the idols. Joyfully, those thousands of soldiers of these three allied kings hasten to the ditches and greedily drink this delicious water. They will not die from thirst. God has given deliverance in this distress. Another wonder happens this very same day. Far in the distance, the Moabite king and his entire army are standing on the border of their land, keeping watch. They will make every effort to defend their country. When the sun rises and shines upon this water, it looks like a sea of blood to them. The Moabites think the soldiers of the three kings have been fighting each other and that they have killed one another. They hastily come running forward to plunder everything. But they are mistaken. Suddenly, the army of the three kings falls upon them and defeats them completely. Their land is laid waste. In this way, the Lord has helped them again.